was Kershaw tipping pitches. CJ, how does the hitter see that and take advantage?
Well, first and foremost, Chris, if it did happen, it always happens when the pitcher is in the stretch. Rarely can you pick up pitches when a guy is thrown from the windup, and that's what we saw in that seventh inning.
My shoulder's already starting to hurt.
My shoulder's in pain.
Literally, like, my lat muscle, I'm denying the MRI, but my lat muscle is in pain.
Why did we do that? We're, like, reliving the glory days, and every time we do it, we're like, this is a terrible idea.
By reliving the glory days, if you mean I have to one-hop you on, like, a 100-foot throw, then I guess I'm reliving the glory days.
Yo, but I was sitting, like, 55 out there on the mound, so...
Bro, I was sitting at least 65. I'm not even kidding.
Damn, dude.
I'm not even kidding. I was sitting 65.
The A's bullpen is calling. They want your arm.
I'm just kidding. Moment of silence for what used to be the A's bullpen, which is now the Nationals bullpen, which hurts me.
Yeah.
Speaking of the A's, on the car ride back here from Philadelphia to New York that we were on today, you got a little sad about Sonny Gray.
Yeah. Well, they announced earlier in the day that they were going to pull him from his start tomorrow, which if you're listening to this podcast will probably be yesterday. But they're pulling him from his start because obviously he's in the trade talks, and now it's rumored that he will likely end up with the Yankees, but also Billy Bean, there was rumors coming out that they were not going to trade him at the deadline if they didn't get the right deal, which why would you do that?
That feels like they leaked that. Teams are good at that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they are. But even still, I mean, just as a piece of fodder of conversation, that seems like a bad move. You have all the leverage right now, right?
Yeah, it also, like, it's a little bit of an insult to, like, Brian Cashman's intelligence. Yeah. Is he going to be like, oh, well, I guess you're not going to trade him, so I'm going to give up, like, Gleyber Torres for him? No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of wholesale right now for the A's. And with the exception of, like, Yonder Alonso, it doesn't really look like he's going to move right now. He might. But, yeah, where's your head at on Sonny Gray? I mean, you've had a few years to really get to know him as a pitcher, and he's been one of your favorite A's for the last couple of years. So what is it going to be like to see him in a different uniform?
It's going to be really hard. I mean, I think it's almost – if he went to the Yankees, it would make me happy because I could still root for him out here. That would be fun. And also, whenever these guys are getting traded, it makes me a little happy that they're going to a contender. Just because I know how hard it is to be an A's fan, and I'm sure it's harder to be an A's player. So to get to go
not when those checks come in, though.
True. To go to an organization that is actually competing for something on a semi-regular basis has to be a pretty cool feeling. So you know what? I will be happy for him if he goes to a place that's making a playoff run. I will be really sad that he won't be wearing green and gold.
Let's be honest. The hardest part of the baseball relationship is the fan half. Like, we don't get anything out of this.
Yeah.
You know what we get?
Yeah.
We lose a lot of money.
Yeah, we lose a lot of money. I was just thinking about this the other night. We were just talking about this. Baseball, it kind of sucks you dry as a fan. You're basically just pouring money into the system, and you're getting nothing out of. You just develop connections to, like, men running around in tight pants.
Yeah. The amount of times I've heard you say, whatever, this is just men running around in tight pants. It's stupid.
It's like, why do we do this?
Because it makes us feel like children, and you know everything that's good in life makes you feel like a child.
Why are we talking about this for an hour as if it matters?
Damn, you just got really nihilist. We're like 10 minutes into the podcast, and you got really nihilist.
Yo, welcome to Tipping Pitches, everyone.
Oh, true. Yeah, this is Tipping Pitches. You know, our baseball talk show, which happens like twice a day in our apartment, and we figured we'd just put it on air because for the time being, we're still in college. I don't know how long that's going to last. And we still have access to the crisp, clear audio of 89.1 WNYU, so shout out to them. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, shifting more generally now, it is the trade deadline season.
Yeah, we're coming to you. It's Saturday night for us, so we probably don't know any of the news that's happening. But you're not coming to us for news, let's be honest.
Yeah, nah, you're coming to us for those nice, lukewarm, couple-day-old takes.
So you talked a little bit about seeing one of your guys leave his team and join a contender and how hard it would be to see him not be in green and gold. My guy, Lucas Duda.
Talk to me about him. How you feeling over here?
I haven't really thought about it. I'm in the denial stage. I've seen him in a Mariners uniform a couple times, but it sort of looked a little photoshopped in my brain. I was really sad when he got traded. I was at work, and as you know, Newsday likes their employees to stay agnostic, so I try not to be too obnoxiously up or down while I'm at the Newsday offices. So I just was sort of like, I turned to my editor behind me, and I was like, oh, Lucas Duda got traded. And he was like, oh, I guess we'll have to post a story about that. And I was like, oh, I guess my heart is in 1 million pieces.
yeah, we were messaging back and forth right after the trade went down. And I was trying to argue with you about whether or not this reliever, the Rays' 30th best prospect, was good or not. And I was like, I don't know, man. I guess maybe the reliever is good, or maybe he's not good. What? Let's talk about it. And you were like, I don't know, man. I'm just sad. And I was like, that's so fair. I feel that.
You were like, so Lucas Duda's not in the Mets. And I was like, why do you have to be like this? I don't know. I don't know enough about this Rays reliever. I genuinely don't even remember his name. Something Smith?
Maybe.
John Smith. John Smith from the Rays. He might turn into a back of the bullpen arm. He might not, but I think they got something for Duda. It's sad that he got traded while they were on the road and then came back to New York as a member of a different team.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's like probably really emotional for him. Maybe not. He seems like a pretty level-headed guy. but all things considered, in the Lucas Duda era, which was filled with sadness, he was around for like 8 years. And he was a solid everyday first baseman for them for when he wasn't injured, which is pretty often. He had a lot of back issues. I liked him probably more than your average Mets fan. I don't know what it was about him. It was like that tantalizing power that he had. And during that 2015 magical second half run, I think that was really when I was starting to re-accept baseball into my life as an everyday thing that like owned my heart, you know? I think for those like down Mets years, I was just pretty nihilist about it. And then 2015 rolled around, and right after the All-Star break, I went to like, I think 2 out of the 3 games against the Nats, and he was just red hot at that time. So I associate Duda with that, like, you gotta believe, like, second half of 2015 Mets. And then of course those dreams were shattered in the World Series. But and I think that's kind of completes the circle, right? Is that Duda's throw home was one of the things that shattered it in the World Series. But you know, baseball is a agonizingly flawed game, and he was a flawed player in many ways, but in the ways that he wasn't, I loved to watch.
But that's where you create those connections with those guys, right? You learn to love their flaws, and you learn to love the ways that they excel. I mean, you kind of develop those relationships in the ebbs and the flows. And I saw one tweet that kind of put it into perspective that, you know, Duda has known some of the guys on this team for a decade. I mean, and that's hard, and you sometimes forget about that. You're a fan, and you're like, oh, man, I miss rooting for this person, or what team are they going to go to, or why do they do this? But, like, you know, these are real people. I mean, he's going to be making a few million dollars wherever he goes, but it's definitely tough. I mean, you build up a relationship with these guys and a family there, and so, you know, I can sympathize with that.
Yeah, I think this is the point in the podcast where we need to mention the We Follow Lucas Duda account. I love Curtis Granderson, like, more than – no one in my family is going to listen to this. So more than like 80% of my extended family. Just kidding. And to see him just kind of be like sad behind the camera of the We Follow Lucas Duda account, which if you don't know, is an Instagram account. It's literally just called We Follow Lucas Duda. And it's Curtis Granderson running around, walking like into Duda or into rooms and like shoving the camera in Lucas Duda's face. And Duda is like one of the most vanilla, normal dudes. Like he's walked up to the same song for about as long as I can remember being a Mets fan and watching him. And so he's like not the most thrilling on camera presence. So Granderson would just walk up to him and he would just try to push the camera out of his face. And it was just like this playful banter back and forth. And they posted 2 videos of Granderson just being behind the camera, just going, "Bye, Lucas. We'll miss you. Bye." And then the next one, he was laying on the ground holding on to Duda in street clothes. Like, Duda was in his street clothes getting ready to, like, walk out of the locker room. He had changed out of his uniform. And Grandy is just around his ankles. like pulling on him, like asking him not to leave, being like, no, no. And I was just like, man, I had to watch, like, my editor was like writing an article about those two videos behind me, and I was just sitting there being like, my heart, it's breaking slowly and over again.
Yo, we started out this podcast sad. It's not always going to be this sad. We just happened to pick our first episode to talk about the fickle nature of baseball and how everything is fleeting, and does any of this matter anyway?
And the trade deadline's honestly not done. There's a good chance that Granderson might get moved. I think the Brewers are interested in picking up a lefty bat and a clubhouse presence should they make the playoffs. I'll be very, very sad if Curtis Granderson gets moved. I'm going to save those emotions for if it actually happens. I don't want to pour them out into the world and put that negativity into this room. That would really overflow the negativity in here. But yeah, likely Addison Reed might get moved. Asdrubal Cabrera might get moved. These are people who I haven't had a connection with as long. But I like Addison Reed. I like him as a player. And I love his intensity on the mound. And that's another thing that I associate with these last few years of good Mets teams is, like, his flat brim, like, all the way down over his eyes and him looking, like, angry. And then, like, after the games, just him looking like a regular chill dude to hang out with. So I'll be sad if he gets moved as well. But, yeah, what about the rest of the trade deadline? I mean, let's go macro. Let's go league-wide. What are some moves that you think might have a big impact? And what teams do you think still have some noise to make?
Well, I mean, not to bring it back to Gray, but that's kind of one of the last dominoes to fall, right? I mean, he's an impact arm who could really bolster an Astros rotation. Or, you know, again, the Yankees, who might want to use him to replace Michael Pineda. It's, you know, the last guys kind of out there are him and Yu Darvish. And I heard that the Tigers are probably not going to move Verlander. So it's looking like those are the two guys who are left out there, unless I'm missing anyone. And obviously we can't talk about the trade deadline without mentioning the Dodgers and what they're up to. They just lost Clayton Kershaw, who will be out however long. I hear he's making progress, but he'll still be out another 4 to 6 weeks. So,
I think it's surprising to me that the Astros have kind of fallen out of that Sonny Gray race. I mean, maybe they're like a dark horse to jump back in at the last minute, but it seems all signs are pointing to Sonny Gray to the Yankees, and maybe by the time y'all are listening to this, he's on the Astros. To me, that would make sense. That's something that we've talked about a lot, is they kind of need a third guy behind Keuchel and McCullers, and I think he might be a good guy for them.
You mean Colin McHugh's not cutting it?
Colin McHugh reference number one. You've been you've been mentioning Colin McHugh an inordinate amount of times in the last week. And to be honest, I've never heard his name said out loud before that.
Yeah, but now you have.
Yeah, shout out to Colin McHugh. If you're listening, come on the pod. Friend of the pod, Colin McHugh.
Yo, that's my guy right there.
Love that guy. But yeah, so Yu Darvish, where are we thinking that he might go?
My money might be on the Dodgers, honestly, because they're looking for a rental sort of guy.
That wouldn't be fair, I'm just saying.
I mean, no, it obviously wouldn't be fair, but I'm not really sure who else is looking for that kind of rental guy just for this year. I mean, they really only need someone to pick up the slack at the back of the rotation, and they may not even do that, right? I mean, they may sit pat because they're going to be okay with Alex Wood and Rich Hill and Brandon McCarthy, who is, you know, great.
Is there another year on Darvish's contract, or is he a free agent next year?
Yeah, I want to say Darvish's contract is up after this year, so he really would be, you know, one of those 2 month, 3 month guys if you make it to October.
Yeah, but if you're the Dodgers and you have just this plethora of money and young talent, it kind of makes sense to me.
I saw a report that said they didn't want to give up any of their top prospects, guys like Alex Verdugo, who are tearing up AAA. So, you know, maybe they do stand pat. They have a wealth of pitching, I feel like, and a pretty strong bullpen as well, so they may not need
it. They have a wealth of everything.
Yeah, what don't they have a wealth of?
They're on pace to win 114 games.
Jesus.
The other thing with Clayton Kershaw is I feel like every single year, around this time, like as we're pushing into August, Kershaw is on the DL or like coming off the DL in like a few weeks, and we're always like, has he pitched enough innings to win a Cy Young? Because if he's pitched enough innings, it's not even a conversation. But now we're just talking about how many innings has Clayton Kershaw pitched this whole season.
Yeah, it's like, well, he does have a 1.3 ERA, but he's also only pitched 150 innings. So does that count? Yes. Yes, it counts. What? Just give it to him.
Yeah, that's another one of those things. He should just win it every year.
Yeah.
I guess this is kind of a good segue into what we wanted to talk about in the Dodgers being incredible. like I said, they're on pace for 114 wins. If they finish out this season at the clip that they're at, where would you put them among the teams that you've watched in your life? I mean, we can't. There's so much history of baseball is that we can't speak to a lot of the stuff that we weren't alive for. And we were a little young for the 2001 Mariners. But where would you put them among the best teams of our lifetime? And who else would you have up there in that conversation?
That's hard for me. I mean, aren't you going to put them top five? I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen a team this dominant.
We should put the caveat that this feels a little premature because they haven't really proven anything, and who knows, they could tank in the last few seasons. But
and does it matter if they don't win the World Series, right? I mean, if they're the best regular season team all time. But then again, we're also talking about the Mariners, right?
Yeah. So. It also, you have to put it in context with the Cubs last year, who were like a historically good team, specifically defensively. And so we were spoiled with that model, and they actually did go on to win the World Series. So I think before you actually have this conversation for real, before you get into the hashtag rankings, I think like they would need to win the World Series first. But up to this point, this has been about as good of a baseball team as you could possibly be. Top to bottom, pitching, bullpen, everything. I think the Astros offensively have outshone the Dodgers to this point in the season. But I think as a whole team, like defense, starting pitching, bullpen, even like glamour and intimidation factor, the Dodgers have wrapped it up.
I want to read a stat real quick. This says that the Dodgers lead the Giants by 31 and a half games at this point. Actually, I think this is as of last night, as of Friday night, which is the biggest gap since 1985. And the biggest gap this early in a season since 1902. 1902. I mean, seriously, this is... Where are you going to start? Forget our lifetime. Where are you going to rank these guys? And I know we said that it's a little premature, but where are you going to rank this team all time? I mean, are you...
I think it's fucking hilarious that the first stat that we read out on this podcast was just a way to shame the Giants.
Oh, thank God, right? I mean, hey, all love to my fellas across the bay, but I'm not mad that they're in last place.
Like, no one who's not a Giants fan is mad that they're in last place.
Yep. Wait, so something about an even year or something?
It's an odd year, though.
Did they win last year?
I don't want to talk about it because the Mets. We were watching that game. We were at work together. Alex and I ran a student newspaper in 2016, which means we don't remember much of it. But I do happen to remember this day, the wild card game. Dominant performance from Syndergaard. And I was just like, about as giddy can be, because I was like, oh my God, I'm looking at the next 15 years of my fandom right here. And of course, this year came around and like ruined my entire life. But we got Bumgarnered. Like, that's the worst way to get eliminated from the playoffs, because this is the only thing that I can ever commiserate over with Cardinals fans is getting Bumgarnered. Like, he destroyed them. He destroyed us. It just wasn't fair. Complete game shutout. And it looked effortless. He would have gone like 130 pitches, but he's just happened to do it in like 105. So I'm not going to talk too much shit on the Giants. I feel like you have earned it by growing up across the bay from them and having to deal with it probably every day of your life that you were ever repping anything A's. So I'll give you that respect and I'll let you cook. But for me, until the Mets do something that like props them above the Giants in the social conscience for the time being, I'm just going to retreat back into my corner, sadly.
Damn. Yo, remember when Bumgarner went yard on opening day? And then later in the game, he went yard again? Are you kidding me? Come on.
It's literally mean. It's like a player in a video game that you just turn up their stats on offense and defense, and he's just so good. And then he crashes his dirt bike and breaks four ribs. And
I think he's the Giants home run leader right now.
That's mean. Is that all we want to say about the Dodgers?
Yeah, I think so.
You know who's good at baseball? Who? Kenley Jansen.
Damn, Kenley Jansen is that guy. He struck out the side the other night, and I'm like, this is why are you like this? Like, why do you have to do this? This whole podcast is going to be us talking about good players and being like, what is your point?
No,
what are you trying to do?
Most of it is just going to be like us being like, it's not fair.
Yeah.
Drinking game. Take a shot every time one of us says that's unfair or it's not fair or complains about something not being fair.
Yeah, Aaron Judge is going to have 50 home runs at the end of the year. Is that good?
Radio silence. let's move on to a kind of weird topic, but one that both of us got weirdly fired up over. I think this happened last week, where the report came out
in the Boston Globe. There was a Boston Globe story.
Who wrote it? Was it like Shaughnessy?
Yeah, it was Dan Shaughnessy. And the story was that it was about an altercation, a verbal altercation of sorts between David Price and Dennis Eckersley, which I guess stretches back actually a few years. I guess Eckersley, who is one of the Red Sox commentators, like color guys sometimes.
Also a Hall of Fame pitcher.
Yeah, also a very, very good baseball player in his own right. And the story says that he is one of the more critical commentators and does not bite his tongue when talking about the Red Sox and the players and how well they're doing and that sort of thing. And
which, full stop, he's earned it.
Yep.
Like, if you're a commentator for a team or for somewhere that covers the Red Sox all the time and you're a Hall of Fame pitcher, you have earned the right to be critical of this team.
Yes. And so there was an incident a few years ago with Jackie Bradley Jr. Where Eckersley was really critical of Bradley Jr. And Bradley Jr. called him out on Twitter and something, and then things boiled down. And then I guess it came to a head earlier this year.
You know, these young folk always calling people out on Twitter these days.
Oh, my God. Yeah, old man yells at cloud. And then I guess earlier this year, Eckersley was, it was during a game, and up on the screen, they put Eduardo Rodriguez's minor league numbers. And Eckersley said, yuck, which, like, if you're a minor league pitcher doing poorly, I think that's not unreasonable.
It's not in great taste.
It's not in great taste, but yo, if you've got like I don't know the stats off the top of my head, so I can't even speak to that. But I think more what he was saying is that Eduardo Rodriguez is not doing well in the minors right now. And again, I don't know the context of what he was saying in it or anything like that. But I guess later on, Price and the rest of the Red Sox players were on the team flight and Eckersley boarded, and Price confronted him and called him out and basically said, oh, look at who we've got here. We've got here. The quote is, here he is, the greatest pitcher who ever lived. This game is easy for him. I'm just going to read the story. When a stunned Eckersley tried to speak, Price shot back with, quote, get the fuck out of here. Many players applauded. I mean, all right. Really, David Price? I mean, I've always generally liked him throughout his career, but this seems like in really poor taste. I mean, if you can't, and he said that he was standing up for his teammates, which, look, I respect that and I appreciate that he does that, but it just seems a really strange thing to do, especially when you're getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars to play a child's game. I think you should have maybe a little bit thicker skin. I don't know, that's just my perspective.
Yeah, I think I agree with that for the most part. I would take caution saying that you're getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars and you should have thicker skin. Like, I don't think we should take athletes' voices away from them, but I also don't think they should be using them in like aggressive ways towards reasonable criticism. I just think that's the wrong way to go about it, right? Like, if you have a problem with how he's critiquing the team, which you shouldn't, because that's his job to critique the team. It's your job to pitch. It's his job to critique the team. If you think he's doing it bad, he thinks you're doing it bad, whatever. You go on coexisting. But to do it on the team plane where he's kind of like backed into a corner, and what is he going to do? Fight you? I mean, it's not really, you're using your star status with the team to kind of like say that what Eckersley, to discredit Eckersley's opinion, really, which he played the game for a long time. And like I said, he's a Hall of Famer. So he's kind of earned his stripes, and maybe you should take a little advice, and if he's been overly critical in the past, just take his criticism with a grain of salt and just move on. Like, it's not like what Eckersley said was totally unreasonable, and it's not like what he said was a personal attack on any of these guys. Like, he was critiquing what happened on the field. Maybe there is more context to this. Maybe Eckersley has been, I don't even know, like maybe he's been critical of them in other aspects of their game and their life, and that just hasn't come out yet. But This is all we have to go off of, and from what it sounds like, it just sounds like Price was being a dick.
Yeah.
He broke the don't be an asshole rule.
Yeah, he was kind of bullying Eckersley, honestly. And Price said this game is easy for him. where's the lie? I mean, you're talking to a Hall of Fame pitcher. Like, are you, again, and I agree with you, I'm not trying to take players' voices away from them.
Yeah.
But to...
This is not like First Take where we're like, oh, Colin Kaepernick can't come out and kneel for the national anthem because he gets paid millions of dollars.
Not until he cuts his hair, at least.
God.
No, but yeah, I agree with your point. I mean, it's this kind of thing where if you're not pitching too well, you're going to take some criticism. You don't want to be criticized. Pitch better or talk to Eckersley and be like, all right, what are you seeing from me that maybe I could work on? You said yuck at my stat line. If you have something productive to add.
This is even more weird because he didn't say yuck at Price's stat line. He said yuck at someone else's stat line.
Yep.
And so Price has been there for like a year and a half. Does he feel the need to like shepherd all of the young players and stand up for them? Maybe he does. Maybe he's been a club leader. But from what it sounds like, I don't know if that's the best way to be a club leader. There are plenty of stories from many of the most famous teams in baseball history going back that the guys on the team get kind of fed up and they become assholes with reporters. Like, if you go back to the old reporters and you ask them questions if stuff like this has happened to them before, I bet like 85% of them would say yes. And the 86 Mets were one of the worst teams as it comes to this. So as a Mets fan, like, I'm not going to sit here and critique the Red Sox as an organization or anything like that. But I just think, like, if you're Price, like, this is going to get out, bro. Like, it's not like there's not a closed clubhouse culture in the way that there used to be. So you don't need to be, like, sparring with media personalities. And I think the core of your argument is that, like, if you're like a baseball player who's making millions and millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars more money than I can even fathom in my brain, that you should be able to take a little bit of fair critique from the media, because media coverage and, like, you know, TV money and all that stuff is the only reason you're even making money in the first place. And not to like spiral down the black hole that is like the Kevin Durant argument that you and I have been having for the last year and a half, but I agree with you in that sense, is that like my whole big thing was like Durant was always like kind of sniping at the media and being mad that the media was asking dumb questions and stuff like that. But like, it's part of your obligation as a player. If you want to make this money that the media makes you, then you also have to answer their dumb questions. And in this case, it's not even a dumb question. It's not like Skip Bayless rolling in, second First Take jab. It's not like someone rolling in asking a stupid question like, I don't know, something like, talk a little bit about what it takes to go through struggles at the end of a fourth inning or something dumb like that. It's like Dennis Eckersley being like, just like casually coming in and like in a candid way saying like, damn, he's not doing so hot.
Yeah, I mean, it's directly related to the on-field performance of a player. And maybe there are better ways of him going about it from his end as well. But it's not like he made some sort of personal attack on any one of the players, again, to our knowledge, right? What has gotten out, at least. But, you know, if Eckersley, who, again, Hall of Fame pitcher here, is making a comment about your on-field performance, maybe there are better ways of going about it than yelling at him and telling him to fuck off on, you know, on a team flight in front of a bunch of other people, including other reporters.
Yeah, like pull him off to the side. I don't think we need to just be in agreement for any longer on this, so we can move on. We're going to kind of jump out from the baseball lens. I know this is supposedly a baseball podcast, but you and I care a lot about some other things in life, and one of those things is sports media and its place in the world and its ability to exist, specifically writing. So recently there was some news about Vice Sports and Fox Sports cutting their writing departments. And I know both of us feel very strongly about this, and I know both of us have ranted about this in the comfort of our own homes many times. I'm sure our neighbors have heard us yelling through the walls. And just kind of start me off with where you feel about this. I know we're probably going to be in an echo chamber with many other journalists, but as someone who is getting ready to go into this field in a year, where are you at?
I mean, it's certainly not encouraging. It's disappointing. And I don't want this to end up being just 20 minutes of us yelling about how this is a dumb business model, but this is a dumb business model. In my opinion, as someone who not only is trying to make some of this content, but as someone who consumes this stuff on a regular basis, look, Vice Sports does a lot of really cool video documentary work. And I'm not trying to discredit that at all, but there is such a need, I think, and there always has been, and I think that there always will be, for smart writing. And I mean, especially in the case of Fox Sports, completely not even just like taking a vertical of their website and converting it to video. FoxSports.com is all video now, which I just, frankly...
Yeah, it's like four rows and three columns of just videos.
I really don't get it. It's not an enjoyable experience. First of all, from a technical standpoint, it's a nightmare. Like, your videos never load, and they're like six auto-playing at once. Like, I don't understand it. But also...
You can't figure out what tab's playing an ad and what tab's playing the video that you want.
Really, it's so hard. But also, like... People go to your website for a reason, and I don't know what the ad revenue looks like for this sort of thing, but the sense that I get is that there is an appreciation for good writing. And without good, smart writing, and I mean, Ken Rosenthal kicked this off and announced to everyone that he had just gotten fired from his writing job at Fox Sports, which I know you have your beef with Ken Rosenthal.
I'm good with Ken Rosenthal, man. We're good. I took a jab at him on Twitter and he kind of burned me, whatever.
If you're not going to give Ken Rosenthal a place to write, what are you doing?
I respect that he's just keeping his writing going. He's literally putting it straight onto his Facebook page. Just mad respect. In my opinion, though, I would go to Medium, bro. It looks cleaner. No, I'm a lot of in agreement with what you said. Earlier today, someone asked us, we were sitting around at dinner with my family, and someone asked us as two budding young journalists, how do you guys feel about Vice? And I was like, I think a lot of what they do is really good. They like to think they're very edgy, and I think at times they are.
Well, I think that they are doing stuff that a lot of other people aren't doing.
Or are afraid to do.
Yeah, and they're willing to kind of put themselves out there with that, which is nice.
And kind of what I said was, like, a lot of their documentary work is fantastic, and I will consume a lot of that. It worries me if that's all they're going to be doing, and all of that they're going to be doing is video content for their sports team, because how do you greenlight smaller projects for writers who are looking to make a name for themselves? How do you greenlight a short feature that is pithy and smart and highlights something that doesn't need a longer term thing and a longer term financial commitment? Because so much of journalistic documentary is them sinking money into a thing that eventually they think will turn out a great project. So if it's something smaller that you want to do a project about, and you can't convince your editor, whoever greenlights your projects, that it's going to make them money, it's going to drive traffic, it's going to trend on your website, or even in some cases with some media outlets, even if it's not going to go viral, like totally viral, they'll be like, we're not, just not going to put money into this. Like, you can't send a production team to like Venezuela or whatever to write about like soccer on the streets. And Vice does a lot of that, and they do great work with that. And a friend of ours is part of that team. I'd love to talk to him about this and get his opinion. I just think, like, smaller stuff can be explored through features and writing and smart, clear writing where you can tell a story and have a voice and represent many characters. And then if you see the love for those features, then maybe you flesh it out into a documentary, and maybe you know that there's already interest for that, and then maybe people will want to watch that more. I just think that this puts a lot of power in higher editors and gatekeepers' hands and prevents a lot of young creative voices from finding smaller stories out there in the world.
Not to mention, I have a lot more time to actually read something, right? Like, if I'm on the subway, it's really easy for me to load the page real quick and read it on my commute. Or if I'm at work, you know, pretending to write the story. If my editor is listening to this, I was definitely writing the story.
This is really just about our ability to watch shit at work and download shit to Pocket.
Yeah, but but seriously, I think it's text is one of those things that it's very easy to take wherever you go, especially with, you know, smartphones.
Why did you say it like that? Like, what? What, are smartphones a new thing? Is our audience over 90?
Did you know that you can touch the screen now and it'll do things?
How does this relate to my typewriter? Wait, true story, actually. 30-second interjection. My grandmother, she had a desktop computer at her house, and they bought it, her and my grandfather, before he passed away, thinking that they were going to teach themselves how to use it, like take an online course, whatever. First of all, how are you going to take an online course if you don't know how to use the computer yet? And so one day she was like, I really want you to teach this to me. brought her in there, tried to teach it to her. And at the end of like a half hour lesson about search engines, Google, and how you could use it to find stuff and recipes because she loved to cook, I showed her all this stuff, how you use the mouse, all that stuff. At the end, she just goes, oh, so it's kind of like a typewriter. And I was like, you're the cutest human in the entire world, but you just did not process anything I said at all. And I would love to teach it to you again. It's just not really worth it at this point.
That's amazing.
Anyway, continue.
Yeah, just the point being that I don't really have the time to watch videos. I mean,
oh,
maybe
shit. Oh, wait. Rajay Davis, 2-run walk-off.
Oh, that's my guy. Let's do it. The A's just snapped a losing streak. That's
getting hype in the middle of a nihilist rant about sports journalism. This is us.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, it's really hard to get excited when a platform says that they're switching to all video, just because it's not the easiest thing to consume. It actually requires your full attention. You know, it's not something that you can like, I can go back and read the last paragraph again, or like, I mean, obviously there are pause buttons and rewind buttons. I know that, but I just think that reading text is just so much better in my opinion. And I want to point out, over at SB Nation, they've been doing this series that just wrapped up by John Bois, I believe is how you say his name. And it's basically this multimedia project that is this fictional account of football in the year 17,776. When Americans are still obsessed with football, and it's this like fictional account of a conversation between space probes and yada yada. And the point is that it combines like text and video and like still images and maps and graphics and all this thing. And it racked up like millions of page views, And it's this unique, creative story that uses all these different mediums and put themselves together. And I think you really put yourself into a box when you start stripping those things away and say, we're going to be all in on video. I just think that's really hard to kind of wrap my head around, because there's so much more that you can be doing, you know?
I think one of the things that I worry about most in this, other than what I talked about with like greenlighting smaller projects, is that there's so much nuance to be lost in cutting out words. And I know nuance is like one of the most overused, nuance in storytelling, which is like what we're talking about right now. Those are the two of the most overused words in journalism. But I really do think that like that turn of phrase at the end of a paragraph, like that M dash to signify a pause, like that breaking.
Yo, we're journalism nerds.
Yo, shout out to the M dash. That like break in paragraph, like I really think that a lot of that can get lost in video, because so much of what video is like, be visually engaging, you know, like have the audio sound great. Like you lose a little bit of that creative agency as a writer when you have to conform to just video as your medium. Because I think when you're doing writing, you can put a video in between to show what you were talking about earlier. Like you let that reader get their image in the head and then you show it at the end. And it's beautiful when those two things line up. Like I just think you're missing that harmony. Like, a place like Vice Sports did that really well, because they have like the documentaries that show that go along with stories, and places like ESPN the magazine do that really well with like their longer feature stories. Like something like the, and this isn't necessarily video, that was just great graphics for this, but something like the Mina Kimes like Korean baseball story.
Beautiful.
Yeah, amazing. Stuff like what the New York Times has done with the Syrian refugee crisis, the New York Times magazine. I think that stuff can be really powerful in companion with other things, with words. And I just think you lose some of that when you cut words all together and you put, I don't know, Colin Cowherd or Skip Bayless sitting across from Jason Whitlock in his fedora arguing about whether Colin Kaepernick is black. Like,
I, for one, start my morning with that. I don't know about you. It's Jason Whitlock and a cup of coffee.
Have you read a book named that? Jason Whitlock and a cup of coffee.
Even we were talking about the other night, the Vice Sports story that was just about weird lingo that baseball scouts use. And that's quirky and bizarre. And the lingo was strange.
Damn, dude. Talking about this gives me red ass.
Yo, that's a good face. But, you know, the point is it gives you an opportunity to do some stuff that you don't really see elsewhere. And Vice Sports, I think, was especially good at that because they are trying to push the envelope and that sort of thing. And when you take away the platform for a lot of those really smart, creative writers to do what they're best at, it just doesn't seem that smart to me.
Also, full stop, like, this just fucks a lot of young people. Like, a lot of young people who want to get into the business with clips and writing stuff that you don't have to have a name already for. Like, they're not gonna send you, like, a way to do a long video feature if you have not... maybe they will. Like, I don't know. It cuts another category out that you could be earning a job to do. And yeah, so that's kind of how we feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a disincentive for people to want to actually enter this industry. I mean, you're just pushing people away. You're saying, why would I want to go be a sports journalist if there's not going to be a job for me in 5 years? I'll just do something else.
Also, a lot of people are good at writing. Like, a lot of people are really compelling writers, and they just are not good on video.
Yep.
Like Bill Simmons.
Yeah. And I get that the industry is changing, and that's fine. It's always going to adapt and be different, but...
If your root is words, you just rip the roots out.
Like. You can do more than one thing, right? You can do video and writing, and that's fine.
All right, let's kind of wrap up. We're gonna wrap.
Oh, real quick, Bobby. Before we go, we need to talk about our boy, Timothy Richard Tebow.
His middle name's Richard.
I had no idea until
Tim
I just
Dick?
Looked that up.
God damn it! Wow.
Did you just call him Tim Dick?
Okay. Tim Tebow is. I'm just gonna hot take for a sec right here. The best outfielder in the Mets organization.
Sorry, is that Daryl Strawberry?
Is that the white Daryl Strawberry? Is that Jay Bruce?
Boo. As most as most of you know, the Mets signed him to a contract at the beginning of the season, probably because they knew they were going to need some help this year when they sent Michael Conforto back down.
God damn it. Michael Conforto is amazing. Tim Tebow was a PR stunt that somehow turned into Sandy Alderson's best signing of 2017.
Yeah, so real quick, I'm on his Baseball Reference page. Shout out to Baseball Reference.
Damn, dude, do you use the player index?
So in low A this year, through 64 games, he was hitting .220 with 3 home runs and... and 69 strikeouts. Nice.
Is that real?
That's so real.
That's literally an act of God. And because it's Tim Dick, like, we're descending into loopiness for
sure.
This
is so bad. It's, yeah, we're tired. Anyway, the Mets decided to promote him to high A because why not? Why wouldn't you do that?
When you're doing bad, you promote someone so that they're playing better players and they do worse.
Well, and then when you're doing good, why would you promote them? Hashtag Free Rosario.
I really didn't want to go down this path tonight.
Anyway, yeah, we'll be doing our weekly Tim Tebow update for you, the Tim Tebow experience. I just want to point out that at St. Lucie High A, my guy is hitting .303. Coming into tonight, he had hit 4 home runs. But I just want to update that and say that he has number 5 now.
He went yard tonight?
Oh, he went yard tonight.
Oh, my God. It's like he knew we were going to talk about him.
He's hitting .303. He has a .389 on-base percentage, and he's slugging .495. I mean, my dude has an OPS of almost .900.
It's safe to say I didn't think this would happen, but also I wouldn't have totally put it past him. Like, dude's the definition of putting the team on his back.
He's an athlete.
He's actually a winner. How could you be a winner and an athlete at the same time? He's just a winner in anything he does.
That's true. And he could probably play every position.
How old is he?
He is He's about to turn 30.
Wait, are you serious? Yeah. I'm just wondering because what presidential election can he enter in? If Tim Tebow is not president of the United States, then nothing we've done to this point has been worth it.
That's so true. Honestly, and he's been playing outfield a lot this year. And actually, I think it would be perfect for them to put him at second because you know that God comes first.
That was kind of a fire joke. I thought you were going to make a free Rosario joke and that they should put him at shortstop and block Rosario.
Why not?
Put him at second because God goes first. All right, that we need to end on that.
Yeah, so
you can follow us on Twitter at @tipping_pitches. We hopefully will have a twit pick by the time that you follow us, but if not, whatever, nothing is real anymore. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys.